Hello, and welcome to Silver Threads, a weekly program of information on how you can make your senior years shine. I'm Kathy Van Skoik. Generations is the Journal of the American Society on Aging. It's a publication that I have not been familiar with until lately, but now find it offers many topics pertinent to Silver Threads. The summer 2019 issue provides several articles on seniors in rural America. Rural life impacts seniors in many of the same ways seniors in other areas of the country, but often to a greater degree or with different consequences. In today's first section by former Assistant Secretary for Aging, Kathy Greenlee, reflects on the draw of rural life, its challenges, especially for older adults, and her emotional connections with her roots. That is followed by Suzanne Enarde's Aging in Place in Rural America. First, why people choose the rural life. Is there a place where you feel centered, a place that evokes within you a central calmness, a sense of purpose and peace, a place where life seems most treasured? That special place for each of us represents an outward reflection of our inner selves. I am a fifth-generation Kansan. I grew up in a small town near a bigger city, Clearwater, Kansas. My hometown is an easy drive from Wichita. My maternal grandparents were farmers and ranchers. Those are different things. Farmers grow crops, ranchers raise cattle. My grandparents did both. From Clearwater, I moved to a college town and then to a suburb of our nation's capital. And now I live in a metropolitan Midwestern city. But a big city does not evoke in me a sense of centeredness. Perhaps it does for others. In many ways, urban culture is my second language. I am simply not that far removed from the farm. Ritual, space, and contour in rural life. In grade school, my sister, cousins, and I participated in an odd ritual we did not understand. After dinner at my grandparents' house, we would go outside and sit on the steps of the porch and wait for the yard light to come on. That was it. That was the after-dinner entertainment on the farm. We rolled our eyes and made fun of this ritual for many years. When I gave the eulogy at my grandmother's funeral, I finally understood. By then, I was age 44. It was quiet on the porch, and we had to sit still. Sometimes you could hear men, yes, mostly men, still working in the fields. As the sky grew dark, gathering near the barn, you could see and hear the Black Angus cattle. The fireflies came out, and then the yard light came on. And finally, you could see the stars. The purpose of the ritual was the time out. It was a pause at the end of the day for silence, for listening, for being together, and for appreciating what we had, being outside on the farm. The reason my family chose to live rural is found in the texts of our history books and reflects the westward expansion and settlement of our nation. We moved there in the Revolutionary War, fought in the Civil War, and in the 1880s migrated to Kansas. The land that remained in my family for generations was the traditional land of the Osage Indians. Life in rural America is different. It is quiet, the pace is slower, personal space is abundant, ease of movement is an afterthought. You can physically and emotionally spread out. The air is cleaner. You can smell grass, trees, freshly cut wheat. You can see the stars and the Milky Way. In the vast middle portion of America, you can see the entire sky, from one horizon to the other. People who live in cities or in rural areas with mountains and trees do not live with the sky the same way we do on the Great Plains. The sky brings rain, violent weather, lightning strikes that sparks prairie fires, migrating birds, and spectacular sunsets. In the middle of the United States, we obsess about the weather. It is friend and foe. In the contours of rural America, you will find that it is all that is good about our country, all that is challenging, and living reminders of the most troubling aspects of our past. One in five people in the United States lives in an area considered rural. And as Stephen Hirsch points out in another article, non-metro or rural counties tend to have much older populations than do metro or urban counties. Thus, there is a growing divide between urban and rural America, from both an economic and an age perspective. People confront problems when aging, regardless of where they live. Functional limitations, cognitive impairment, caregiving, and transportation are challenges common to all older people. Old is old, wherever you are. It is equally true that rural people encounter difficulties regardless of age, difficulties in accessing health care, absence of public transportation, insufficient housing, lack of broadband internet, and limited employment opportunities are challenges common to rural communities everywhere. Rural is rural, whatever your age. The old people in rural communities epitomize aging in place. But a person cannot successfully age in a rural area without the basic resources needed for people of any age. The closure of a rural hospital has a devastating impact on a rural community and surrounding region. The loss of every physician, psychologist, and pharmacist strikes a blow that falls particularly hard on older people. But the loss of basic access to health care is a setback for everybody, not just the old. At 9 p.m. on May 4th of 2007, the town of Greensburg was hit by an EF5 tornado, decimating 95% of the community. In tornado parlance, EF5 tornadoes are the most severe and most deadly, as was the one occurring that evening. At the time, Greensburg had a population of 1,544, 11 of whom were killed and 60 injured from this catastrophic storm. The tornado laid a path of destruction for 22 miles and reached a width of 1 7/10 miles. It was horror come real. In the aftermath of the destruction, members of the community decided to rebuild. A total of 961 homes and businesses had been destroyed. Of these, one particular business became the focus of attention by the community, media, local Chamber of Commerce members, and Governor Kathleen Sebelius. Can you guess which local business became the centerpiece of concern? It was the grocery store. Each rural community is unique. The opportunities and challenges they face often reflect the presence or absence of people with a specific skill. In my partner's rural Missouri hometown, for example, the sheriff is also the preacher. Rural people have to adapt. They take care of each other. Rural communities figure it out. They protect each other. When I was a child, it was a big deal to be downtown when the fire alarm sounded. It was the call to assembly of the volunteer fire department. Men raced on foot and by pickup truck to the downtown gas station in which the fire truck and ambulance were housed. If you share this experience, you are rural. The old people living in small towns and rural areas are not strangers in their communities. They are known by name by the mayor, the banker, the barber, and the preacher. Social isolation is a menace gaining increasing attention, which is all for the better. Older rural people are at risk for social isolation, but what they have going for them may be a lifetime of community involvement. Our best advice for rural communities may be as simple as asking rural leaders to check up on older residents and ask about their needs. I continue to believe faith communities are an untapped resource, especially in small towns. In my town, church and school were the social hubs of the community. I know where I am from. I have a physical sense of my roots. I was raised rural because my people were rural. My hometown is also my family history. I remain friends with people I have always known. I have no concept of how it feels to be a stranger in grade school or high school. My immediate family, grandparents, aunts, uncles, graduated from the same high school. People are raised rural and stay. People are raised rural and leave, often for educational or economic opportunities. Some urbanites move to the country. I live in Kansas City. but will eventually return to be buried with my many generations of family. For now, you can hear the rural girl inside of me each time I complain because I cannot see the stars. It breaks my heart. Now, Home Sweet Home, Aging in Place in Rural America by Suzanne Inarde. Rural America, which covers more than 70% of the country, is a diverse set of landscapes, from farming communities that lie just beyond burgeoning suburbs to isolated mountain hollows and sweeping plains. This vast area is home to about 20% of America's people, but houses a larger share of its older adults. Roughly 1 in 4 Americans age 65 or older lives in a rural area. These rural elders typically are longtime dwellers in the particular places they call home. They are invested in the character of the places and in the human connections that they have developed and relied upon for years. For them and for me, rural is simply our culture. Fully 70% of rural older adults say there is something or someone to turn to for support, all or most of the time, compared with 57% of older adults living in cities and 69% in suburban areas. Like other Americans, most rural elders want to age in place. They want to grow older in their own homes and, if a move to another dwelling becomes necessary or desirable, to remain in their communities, whether they define that as a county, one side of a river valley, or a rural corner of the state. To accomplish that, they will need a range of services that either come to them across the long distances of rural America or are clustered nearby, and they will need to a continuum of local housing options that can meet their changing needs and accommodate personal choice. This need for accessible services will grow as the outsized baby boom generation advances in age and younger people continue to migrate to metropolitan areas in search of economic opportunities. By 2030, 4 of 10 rural households will be headed by an older adult, compared with 1/3 of all U.S. households. Affordability must be a priority. Rural households have lower median incomes than urban households, but more importantly, rural people are much more likely to live in counties with concentrated poverty, a rate of 20% or higher, a social and economic disadvantage that contributes to rural residents' higher rates of chronic disease. Despite the needs, sparsely populated rural places often cannot offer the economies of scale that attract investment in housing and services. This is a fundamental challenge for those of us who work in rural community development, and something I have seen firsthand, having been involved in rural housing, community, and economic development since 1991. First, I was founding executive director of a community-based organization, CBO, in Fowler, Colorado, Tri-County Housing, and now as vice president of the largest community development financial institution in the United States, Local Initiative Support for Corporations, or LISC, and director of its rural-focused program, Rural LISC. Rural LISC pools public and private dollars for rural community development and directs these funds, along with technical know-how, to 88 local nonprofits serving more than 2,100 rural counties that are working to make these communities great places to live, work, raise a family, and age in place. Local governments and nonprofit CBOs respond to the challenge by working hard to cobble together federal and private sector resources, and to direct these resources for maximum benefit. Take my longtime home of Otero County, Colorado, population 18,326, a 1,200 square mile swath of prairie under a huge sky where only 4 new housing units were permitted in 2017. I'm glad there is an affordable, friendly, assisted living place for 29 older adults here in the small town of Rocky Ford, population 3,827. Working with Tri-County Housing and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, USDA, Rural Development Program, It took this strong-willed community 8 years to get the facility built. Some of the challenges faced were putting together a complex financing structure that included the local bank, USDA Rural Development, the Colorado State Division of Housing, a local foundation, and even the local high school's student council, which chipped in some funding. The reality is that 8 years to build a facility is not ideal, given the critical need for these types of residences in rural America. To foster the development of more rural senior communities and affordable housing as a whole, we need more government and private resources to prioritize rural areas in an equitable way. 20% of U.S. population lives in rural America, yet private investment is woefully lower than it is in urban places. According to a USDA Economic Research Service study of foundation grant making, from 2005 to 2010, of the 1,200 to 1,400 largest foundations in America, only 5.5% of their domestic grant dollars went to rural causes or organizations. Even more startling is the fact that of that 5.5% of grant dollars, $5.4 billion, less than 6%, approximately $310 million, went to rural community and economic development. The rest of the monies went to rural colleges and universities. In many ways, the American ideal of home ownership is a reality in rural settings. With homes providing stable shelter for domestic life and the chance to build family wealth by paying off a mortgage. More than 83% of older adult households in rural and small town areas are owner-occupied, and of those, about three-quarters are owned free and clear. Nevertheless, 24% of rural older adult homeowners face housing costs, including not only a mortgage, but utilities, insurance, taxes, and maintenance, that claim 30% or more of their household income. Rental housing is generally less available in rural areas than it is in metro areas and unaffordable to older adult renters, as more than half of them are coping with housing cost burdens, that is, paying more than 30% of their income on housing. Although in recent years there are fewer rural homes and that lack plumbing and electricity, rural housing stock generally is older, which means it's more likely to be energy inefficient and not designed for universal accessibility. Wherever adults choose to hang their hats as they raise their families or build their lives, the realities of aging happen. And even a secure housing situation can become more precarious in older age. Income dwindles, it may become harder to pay for utilities, taxes, insurance, and upkeep. On older homes, waning eyesight and mobility, to say nothing of major health crises, can make it tough to perform the chores of running a home, climbing stairs, even getting to the mailbox on a frosty morning. When it comes to maintaining and retrofitting the home itself, low-income rural elders have access to some help, largely thanks to nonprofits and local governments that leverage federal funding streams for that purpose. For example, they can use HOME funds and Community Development Block Grant monies from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, or loans and grants from under USDA's Section 504 Home Repair Program. In California's San Joaquin Valley, Rural LISE partners with the nonprofit Self-Help Enterprises and uses all of these resources to rehabilitate homes for families making no more than 80% of the area's median income. Many older adults retired from agricultural work that helps make the Central Valley one of the most productive farming areas on Earth. These older Americans are deeply attached to the modest single-story homes in which they have invested over the years. Their home equity would vanish quickly in market-rate senior housing elsewhere, and for the most part, they aren't interested in moving. They've lived there for so long, and they see that as their legacy to leave to their children, said Susan Long, Program Director for Partner Services at Self-Help Enterprises. Self-help enterprises, like similar CBOs across the country, makes deferred payment loans and supervises work by independent contractors to make homes safe and accessible. Pulling up carpets, widening doorways, adding grab bars and ramps, and tackling a host of deficiencies, from electrical and plumbing issues to rotted flooring to ancient swamp coolers that are ineffective in the Central Valley's baking heat. The program has rehabilitated some 6,000 homes, an activity that stimulates the local economy while preserving homeowners' equity. Low-income rural elders, whether homeowners or renters, can also receive assistance with heating and cooling bills, often a big slice of the household budget, through the federal Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, which prioritizes older adults. And through local utilities or service agencies, many elders can access grants for energy-saving work like weather stripping, furnace repairs, and insulation, provided by the Department of Energy's Weatherization Assistance Program, or WAP. Income eligibility for WAP varies by state, but clearly the program is important in rural areas. A survey found that in 2011, 87% of WAP's clients were homeowners, and the majority lived in detached single-family homes or mobile homes. 43% of these households were headed by a person age 60 or older. As important as this housing-related help can be, probably the most essential asset for aging in place is a person who can drop by with groceries or provide daily assistance with everyday routines, such as preparing meals, showering, and taking medicines. To mount such a labor-intensive, place-specific response is a particular challenge in rural areas that have fewer younger adults available to do the work, whether as family members or paid aides, and where population dispersal can add hours of windshield time to caregivers' schedules. Medicaid is the single biggest payer for long-term care, and most state programs are using policy levers to shift the hands-on care from institutional nursing facilities to client homes, where it is far less expensive. But looking at a 2008 Medicaid data have shown that rural beneficiaries are less likely than urbanites to receive these home and community-based services. That may be a function of capacity. In metropolitan areas of Wisconsin, for example, there are about 442 home care provider agencies per 1,000 square miles. But in rural areas, only 32 providers cover 1,000 square miles. These rural providers report struggling to find workers who are willing, for low pay, to make the necessary long commutes on salted, icy winter roads, especially when clients need only an hour or two of care. Cars are by far the dominant mode of transportation in rural America, a lifeline particularly for those living in remote locations that are not well served by the dial-a-ride shuttles and volunteer or nonprofit transport services, which, in rural areas, take the place of fixed-route buses and trains. Sometimes the critical issue for rural elders is not so much whether they can navigate within their homes, but whether they can still navigate the miles that separate their homes from shopping, social activities, and medical appointments. With the loss of driving ability, the tranquility of an especially remote location can turn into daunting isolation. As one Oregon resident told Grantmakers in Aging, GIA, through a GIA listserv, on the homestead, farms, and ranches way out, their options are only friends and family. They don't get deliveries or transit there. Often the conversation is a lifestyle change. Sell and move out of town. Well, imagine that a rural elder contemplates moving to downsize for accessibility, to minimize expenses, or to get closer to help. To where exactly can they move? There is some evidence that older rural residents enter nursing homes for long-term care at a higher rate and with lower care needs than do most of their urban counterparts. And this is because, well, one reason may be the dearth of alternatives. The nursing home is there, it has been there for a long time, and Medicaid will pay for it, whether immediately or after the resident's savings are exhausted and he or she becomes income eligible. To community developers, this looks like an opportunity gap. Each rural area needs a right-sized supply of compact, affordable, and accessible homes, including rentals, independent living senior apartments that alleviate the burden of home maintenance, assisted living facilities that join housing with hands-on help, and nursing homes that offer higher-level, round-the-clock care in a place that feels warm and personal. This approach has an economic impact for both older adults and government. As one potential answer to rural housing needs, advocates are turning to a form that's already commonplace in rural America, manufactured homes. They're the country's single biggest source of unsubsidized affordable housing, and more than 1 in 10 rural older adults lives in one today. Though less respected than its hip younger cousin, the tiny house, the manufactured home arguably offers greater flexibility for rural elders. It can be made quickly at a fraction of the cost per square foot of the typical site-built house. It is relatively accessible, usually only a few entrance steps, and is guaranteed to meet HUD standards for energy efficiency and quality, first established in 1976. In many rural areas, a manufactured home can be placed on a single lot by itself or as accessory unit to another home, often that of a family member, or in a manufactured home park. Well, having been a suburbanite for all of my childhood and most of my adult life, these articles have enlightened me to the issues of facing rural seniors. While the same as those facing most seniors, health access, transportation, housing, and nutrition, it is clear that they can be a greater burden for those dwelling in rural areas. Thanks for listening, and until next week, I'm Kathy Vanskoyt. You've been listening to Silver Threads, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. The audio producer for the show is Maureen Rich, and I'm Kathy Vanskoyt. I hope you will join me again next week for more information and updates for making the best of your silver years. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.